Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
Next up, Dr. David Morehouse. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show. Next up on News for the Soul, it's Be Empowered, Be Inspired with Raymond Posch. And today, his special interview, recent interview with Neil Donald Walsh. Here's his intro now.
I'm Raymond Posch, your spiritual life coach and host for the next hour. The show today is an interview with Neil Donald Walsh, world-famous spiritual author and teacher. Welcome, listeners, and welcome, Neil.
Thank you, Ray. Let me begin by saying that I do not consider myself a teacher for the following reason, Ray. Teachers are people who stand in the front of the room and presumably understand and know fully what it is they're sharing with their so-called students. I don't consider people who've read my books to be my students, nor do I feel that I really understand fully the message that I have received. That is, I'm not a practitioner of the messages. I'm a receiver of the messages. I simply took dictation. And I feel, you know, a lot like a secretary in a major corporation who's way above his pay grade and was just given a lot of dictation by the boss and doesn't understand two-thirds of it, but took it down, you know, reliably and has passed it on. But if you ask the secretary, you know, what did Zuckerman mean in that email, the secretary would say, I haven't the foggiest idea, but I'm trying to learn it as fast as I can. So I really step away from any thought that I would allow anyone to have that I'm a teacher of anything. But am I a messenger? Fair enough. And I do think I brought the messages pretty well, reliably. And I can explain what I understand the messages to mean, but I would never imagine myself to be a teacher of any kind.
Okay, well, thank you for that clarification.
Nor would anybody else who knows me. They would laugh at that, Neil, a teacher? I don't think so.
Okay, well, let's go on then. So although my guest needs no introduction to most people, let me introduce him to you anyway with a little bit of formal introduction then. Neil Donald Walsh is a modern-day spiritual messenger whose words continue to touch the world in profound ways. With an early interest in religion and a deeply felt connection to spirituality, Neil spent the majority of his life thriving professionally, yet searching for spiritual meaning before experiencing his now famous conversation with God. And I relate to your words there, Neil. I've been a seeker and a searcher myself. The Conversations with God series of books that emerged from those encounters that he had have been translated into 37 languages, touching millions and inspiring important changes in their day-to-day lives. Neil has written 30 books on spirituality and its practical application in everyday life, too numerous to list here, but his most recent books are The Storm Before the Calm, published in 2011, The Only Thing That Matters, published in 2012, What God Said, published in 2013, God's Message to the World, You've Got Me All Wrong, published in 2014. Conversations with God, Awaken the Species, Book 4, 2017. And the most recent one, The Essential Path, Making the Daring Decision to Be Who You Truly Are, published in 2019. So welcome, Neil. How are you today?
Well, you know, I'm wonderful. Thank you, Ray, and I hope that you are as well.
I am, yes. But in the show today, I would like to focus on two broad interrelated topics. One, the state of the world and mankind, and two, the need for humanity to awaken. So we will be focusing in part on your two most recent books, which are definitely related to those two topics. Let's go ahead and get into the meat of this. So I would like to note also for the listeners, the first three Conversations with God books were published back in 1996 to 1998. I loved them and read them back to back. And what is distinctly interesting, I think, and I think significant now, is that the Conversations with God book 4 was not published until quite recently, 2017. Please talk about the significance of that.
I thought that I had really completed the experience, that I was complete with the experience of, I want to say, full-length, book-length Conversations with God. Of course, we're all having conversations with God all the time, so that experience would never end. But in the sense of a book-length dialogue, I thought I had completed that experience after 8 or 9 such episodes. But much to my surprise, a couple of years ago, I was awakened in the middle of the night or felt myself aroused to the point where I thought my mind was filled with a feeling, really, that I had had before. And I recognized the feeling immediately. Something wants to come through here. Something wants to be said. I didn't know what it was, but I knew enough to get out of bed. It must have been 4:30 or 5 in the morning, and to get to a keyboard as fast as I could, because I did know that feeling. So although I had not experienced that feeling in almost 10 years, but I got to the keyboard and out came what I titled Conversations with God, Book 4. And the subtitle of that book was Awaken the Species. And in that book, Ray, I was given, and all of us were given, an invitation to awaken the species. Prior to that, I had received two other invitations from God: change the world's mind about God, invitation number one, and invitation number two, give people back to themselves. But this was a third invitation that I had never received before: awaken the species. And as with the first two invitations, they were not meant just for me, but for everyone whose eyes would find themselves placed before them and who would really receive that message. So we are all then invited to join in this triple invitation from God: change the world's mind about God, give people back to themselves, and awaken the species. Now, you have to know, Ray, that I ask God, how do I do that? With regard to the third invitation, how am I or how are any of us going to awaken the species? And God said, by simply being who you really are, by moving through life, walking through life, thinking, acting, and speaking as a representation, as a representation of who you truly are, of your true identity. Of course, Conversations with God let us know that our true identity is that we are one with divinity. Not that we are the totality of divinity. I get myself in trouble when I talk in these terms, because some people say, oh, so you think you're God. And the answer that I give is, no, wait a minute, let's be fair. I didn't say that I thought I was God, but I do think that I am a part of God, that there's no separation between God and me. I really see myself as a wave on the ocean of divinity. The wave is not separate from the ocean. A wave is not other than the ocean. It is simply an individual arising of the ocean in its own individual and powerful and sometimes beautiful form. But when that wave has finished with its expression, it recedes back into the ocean whence it came. And that's exactly a metaphor for how I feel my relationship is with God. So am I God in totality? Of course not. But am I God in the sense of being made up of the same stuff, individualized? I believe that that's true about every sentient being in the cosmos. So now, making the daring decision to be who you truly are means making the daring choice to demonstrate, to speak, and to act in a way that would announce my essential essence, which is divinity. And so that's been the effort, the undertaking of my life, Ray, for the past 25 years since I had my first conversation with God. Now, let me conclude my little diatribe here by indicating that I'm not declaring by any means that I have succeeded in that, because I simply have not. And anyone, as I said a minute ago, who knows me would be real clear with you that no, I'm not the earthly representation of divinity. But have I gotten there once in a while? Have I achieved that in certain moments? Have I experienced that now and then enough that I know it's possible to continue that experience? Yes, I have had that experience. And most of us have had. Most of us have had moments in our lives when we have felt like, wow, now that's who I really am. When we've had that experience, it's almost unforgettable, and we yearn to return to that place, or as he used to say on the Lone Ranger, to those thrilling days of yesteryear. Who is that masked man? So which is more appropriate today than ever. No, I have not achieved the fulfillment of my agenda to demonstrate divinity in all the thoughts, words, and actions of my life. But I, at least now I know where I'm going, and that's a huge difference from where I was 25 years ago when I had no idea. What am I doing here? What's this all about? I don't understand. What's expected of me? What's desired? You know, what am I doing on the earth? Who am I anyway? And that's where I was in my early 50s, having gone through life for a half century and having no real solid fundamental idea about, you know, what life is really all about. So I'm so grateful that I had the conversation with God experience, because that experience resulted from my calling out. I fell to the floor one day. I recall the moment vividly, you know, calling out to God, you know, what is it? What is it I don't understand here? The understanding of which would change everything. And God was so sweet. She just gave me the sweetest answer. He said, Neil, do you really want answers to your question? Or are you just venting? Because if you're just venting, it's okay. I mean, all of us, you know, it's a common human experience. But if you really want an answer to your question and to every other question you ever had about me and about life, calm down, relax, grab a piece of paper, get a pencil. I'm going to answer you. And the result of that was my conversations with God.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that story and really explaining how these books have all come about and a little bit of your history there. Yes, thank you. And I think the metaphor you used of a wave on the ocean is such a good one. I talk a lot about oneness these days, and you know, I'm always looking for ways of expressing that or kind of getting it across to others what oneness is. And that provides a good way.
Oh, it's a wonderful, Ray. I've used it in front of lecture audiences now for a while. It's a wonderful metaphor because everyone gets it. The wave is not something other than the ocean. nor is it separate ever from the ocean. It is simply an arising of the ocean in individual form. Everyone can see the metaphor in their mind's eye almost immediately, and they can embrace it, and they can go to a place where they can say, you know, now I can accept that. I can see that. I can accept that. Am I an arising of that which is, and never separate from it, never anything other than it? Yes. And I find that people are able to step into that. Yep. And then God said to me, Neil, I'll give you one more clue. Since you now know who you are, go out there and make waves.
That's great. I love it. I'd like to ask you a question about the more recent book to kind of introduce that a little bit to the listeners, and then we can proceed. So when I read that book, I thought that it provides a focused, summarized message in a way, and it offers guidance for today. So please talk a little bit about the purpose of The Essential Path.
Well, I think that the purpose was to place me, all of the books that I've written were really messages directly to me that I was invited to share. I want to say instructed to share with others. But they were messages that I obviously desperately needed to take in my own life. So the purpose of the message was to allow me to see that there was a huge problem in the world today, and that I needed to address, since I had an audience, fair enough, since I had been given the privilege of having an audience of millions, actually multi-millions, not that I'm boasting, but simply announcing that's just what's so. And when you have an audience of multi-millions of people in 37 languages, you can either ignore it and just go ho-hum, so what? Or you can say, now wait a minute, I haven't been placed in this position for no reason. So I should use that platform in a way that inures to the benefit of those people, or as many of those people who can hear me. So that book has as its purpose to bring people an awareness that there is a huge problem in the world today, and that they have a role they can play in solving that problem. The biggest problem, Ray, in the world today, as I see it, is that most people in the world, and almost all the world's leaders, that is our religious leaders, our economic titans of business and industry, our political leaders, most of the world's leaders have no idea what the biggest problem in the world today is. They can see the fallout. They can certainly see the effect of the problem. Rather like trying to start your car and you turn the key and for some reason it doesn't start. And you don't have any idea, since you're not a mechanic, at least I'm not. So if my car doesn't start, and that's happened to me in my life, you get out there and turn the key, and for some reason the car doesn't start, your first thought is, well, the battery is dead. But that can't be true, because you just got a new battery 2 months ago, so it's not that. What is it? But you don't know why the car won't start. All you know is that it won't start. You know you have a problem, but you don't know what the problem is. Now, in the world, when that's the situation, you really have a big problem. I mean, you have a huge problem when you have a problem and you don't know what the problem is, but you can see the fallout. I can put the fallout in one word: alienation. Ray, I'm 77 years old, and I've never seen the kind of alienation that I've been observing in the past several years in the world at large, not just in the country that I live in, the United States, but frankly, all over the world. Governments seem to be alienated from governments more vociferously and vocally than ever before. People seem to be alienated from people. Organizations alienated from organizations. Political parties alienated from political parties. Nationalities alienated from nationalities. Beyond just normal differences of opinion. We've always had differences of opinion, fair enough, but not the way I'm seeing it these days, with such vitriolic and actually down to name-calling and almost threatening war, and getting close to a place where we really, really don't want to see ourselves as a civilization. And so I've never seen alienation like this, which caused me to look at, what is going on? What is the cause of this sudden, deep, deep-seated, deeply felt uprising of utter alienation? one group from another. Gays and straights, blacks and whites, male and female, conservatives and liberals, as I said, people of one nationality, people of another nationality. And I was told in the book, The Essential Path, to recap what I had heard, just as you said, it's a recapitulation of what I've heard in the and been given to share in the other Conversations with God books. The problem is, we think we're separate from each other. We have really bought into, at a very deep level, the idea that I'm over here and you're over there, and you have nothing to do with me and I have nothing to do with you. Maybe I'm close to my loved ones, fair enough, my family and my dear friends, but that's just about where my reach ends and where my sense of connectedness ends. I'm certainly not connected with, you know, people in other countries, especially countries with whom I disagree in terms of their policies and their politics. And I'm not connected with anything else in the universe in the physical sense. Least of all do I feel connected in a direct way with the aspect of life that some of us call God. So that is the major problem. And if we were to eliminate that problem from our lives, that is, if we were to change our minds about that and decide, you know, to act as if we were, in fact, one with everything, that there was no real disconnection any more than there's a disconnection of the wave from the ocean, that we are, each of us, connected to each other in a very real way. I don't mean conceptually, I mean actually, functionally, and physically, that we are all, you know, like, and I asked God, how can I understand this? God said, Neil, I'm going to give you another metaphor, a really easy way for you to understand this. Hold up your hand. And I did. And she said, look at your fingers. And I did. And he said, are they different from each other? I said, well, yes, my thumb looks a great deal different from my little pinky finger and my other fingers. They all look different. She said, do they have different functions? Yes, they all have different functions. Are they separate from each other? Well, I said, not in a sense. I mean, they're connected because they're all part of the same body. And God said, end of story.
Yes, that's good.
And so God asked me to, could I please see each of us as fingers, if you please, on the hands of God, and that the hands of that we all have are appendages, if you please, extensions of the body of God, that we really in that sense are all one. And if we began treating each other in that way, Ray, and then I'll be done with the latest diatribe. You got to be careful. You ask me a 2-second question, I'm going to give you a 45-minute answer. But I've been told these things now for 25 years. So I want to end this one by saying this. If we decided that politically, economically, socially, and spiritually, we were going to treat each other as if we were simply different expressions of the same essence, everything would change in the world overnight. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, what would it take for us to see that? And someone wrote a few years ago, and maybe now 20 or 30 years ago, some science fiction writer, frankly, I forgot who it was, one of the great science fiction writers said, if we were visited by beings from outer space tomorrow, and they were landing, you know, at Yankee Stadium and in the Tiananmen Square and, you know, in the middle of Moscow and the major capitals of the world simultaneously, and threatened the world, we would suddenly experience ourselves as being one with each other instantly.
Mm-hmm.
What we lack is a common enemy. Arrive COVID-19. Arrive economic global collapse in every major country of the world, and arrive in a sudden awareness, an instantaneous awareness of the racial injustice that we have demonstrated, not only in the United States, but in many and most of the major countries of the world. Suddenly we have found, if you please, to use another metaphor, a common enemy. Will these three common enemies be sufficient to bring us to an awareness that unless we stand together experience together and express together and confront together these extraordinarily difficult and challenging circumstances, we will not survive as a species of sentient beings in the way we had hoped to survive. We're not going to be wiped out. I don't want to predict, I don't want anyone to say, Neil Donald Walsh says we're going to be wiped out. No, we're not. The species will always exist. But will we have the experience we were intended to have? Will we express what we were intended to express? The blessing, the glory, and the wonder of who we really are. The extraordinary reality that is the basis of humanity. Will we have that experience? Not unless we finally decide to come together, to stand together, to hold together, to be together, to express together, and to heal together what it is that has caused us this sense of separation, which in turn has resulted in this triple whammy of challenges that we're facing. Yes, even the coronavirus outbreak has been the result of us refusing to stand together and heal together and confront together this event. Excuse me. We were told about this 50 years ago. I can quote you books from 50 years ago from scientists telling us this was going to happen. A virus is coming, they said. It's just a matter of time, unless we act now. And we chose not to act then. Excuse me.
Well, your diatribe, so to speak, and I don't think of it that way, has been very apropos, very appropriate to the times and to our need to... Well, when we talk about awakening of the species, I think, to me, a simple way to boil it down, awakening is kind of a complicated thing that people interpret in different ways, but it is awakening to oneness. And I think you've given us a pretty good explanation of that. I was going to go back to book four and ask the question, actually, in the book, early in the book, you asked the question, how can I be the cause of someone else awakening if I'm not awake? And God's answer was, the truth is, you are awake. You just don't know that you are. And we went on to find out that is really true of most people. Expand on that a little bit more.
Well, Ray, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I want to suggest that most of us have had the experience of being awake. I mean, in the physical sense, not metaphysically, not spiritually, but for now, just let's stick with the physical. Most of us have had at least one time in our life when we were awake and didn't know it. And you heard a sound. The typical example that I like to use is, I hear a noise and I think it's in my dream. I think I'm dreaming that. And then it turns out, no, actually, that actually happened in the room. The cat knocked over the vase in the other room and broke the vase. And you thought you heard that in your dream. And the truth is that you were wide awake. You simply didn't know it. So it's a common human experience. Now, it's also common metaphysically as well, that we are awake, but are not aware that we are awake. And so we act as if we are not awake. A typical example of that is when you do something, I want to use the word loosely, wrong. That's a very loose use of the word, just for the illustration. But when you do something wrong, and you know it's wrong, as soon as you do it, it didn't stop you from doing it, I noticed. You went ahead and did it anyway. But because you didn't want to be aware that you knew that it was wrong, But after you did it, you realized, that it was not the appropriate thing to do, given who you are. I had an experience like that when I was 23 years old, Ray, and I'm going to acknowledge it and admit it. I had an affair when I was 23, and I was married. My dear, lovely wife at the time has since passed on, so I'm not going to hurt her reputation because she's no longer with us. She's up there with the angels in heaven, and boy, she was an angel. But what was I thinking? What in the world was I thinking at 23 that, I mean, what got into me? And so, and I knew, of course, I mean, obviously, I knew instantly when that experience played itself out, I realized, oh my gosh. And I was able to at least confess to my wife and tell her what had happened and what I had done. And being the person that she was, although she was deeply hurt and deeply wounded, she forgave me. And to this day, I come to tears remembering that moment of her forgiveness, which offered me redemption. But I use it as an example because it's a vivid example of knowing who you really are and being aware of it. I mean, from a spiritual metaphysical point of view, not just a physical point of view, but from a metaphysical point of view, from a spiritual point of view, all of us are very clear of who we really are. And when we are not expressing and experiencing and sharing that, when we are not knowing that and experiencing it and being that, there's a part of us that's deeply aware that we still have a little way to go to complete the agenda of the soul, which is to evolve into a full expression of that which we really are. And then when we get to that point, when we can evolve into that full expression of who we really are, then we are, I want to use a kind of an interesting science fiction a plot line here, just pretend with me, because then we're sent to elsewhere, other civilizations, or maybe a different, dare I say it, point in time in this civilization. And we get to show up as one who knows who they really are and offers those whose lives they touch an experience or an opportunity to express the same thing. So there is my response to your question. Kind of go into it a little bit more deeply. Everyone within the sound of my voice knows who they really are spiritually. Are they all acting that way? No. Are they all aware when they have not acted that way? I'm going to hazard the guess is yes. Most of us are aware when we're not being who we really are. But how would we be aware of that if we didn't know who we really are? Good question.
You're giving us a lot to think about here, and I appreciate. I'm going to now ask about highly evolved beings, which I thought ended up playing a definite role in book four, and they play potential roles in the conscious evolution of the human species, as I understand it, as role models or potential guides or mentors. But tell us about that aspect that was in the book.
Well, it's my understanding, and I first heard about this, I think, in one of the earlier books, might have been book two or book three, but I was told that, you know, of course, there are what we would call, for lack of a more articulate way of expressing it, highly evolved beings, which I have used the acronym HEBS, H-E-B-S, just to shorten the reference to them, which is repeated in all the books, I mean, in those last two books, book three and book four. There are highly evolved beings in the universe, and I kind of touched on it just a little bit a little while ago. I understand these are essences, entities that have, you know, achieved a very high level of evolution, and then they have either returned to this environment, I'm saying to the Earth, or perhaps come here from somewhere else in the cosmos, even as we will have the opportunity to travel anywhere in the cosmos that we choose, in order to bring the gift of our awareness to those whose lives we touch in such a way that they can absorb it, embrace it, accept it, adopt it, without feeling somehow that the whole scenario is out of reach. And so we are told in the Conversations with God dialogue that there are highly evolved beings who are walking amongst us. Now, we're not talking about, you know, every third person It isn't like, you know, the next person that you run into at the Safeway at the supermarket is necessarily that person. But that every several thousand years or so, one of those highly evolved beings finds its way to this planet and moves among us in such a way that we become aware of what is really so. And we are reminded again in very specific and direct terms of who we are and of the opportunity that life offers all of us to express and experience that.
Okay.
Are there highly evolved beings? I ask God, are there highly evolved beings on the planet right now in the year 2020? And the answer, of course, I asked God that question a couple of years ago in 2017 when I wrote the book. And the answer I got was yes.
Hmm. I think that's great. You know, I don't know exactly what to do with that information, but
of course we're all going to ask. And I ask, okay, then give me the names. You know, who are we talking about? You know, Duke Ellington, Barbara Streisand. You know, who is it? And God said, no, we're not going there.
Okay.
Because if I were to identify even one, then you would hold them in a totally different way and miss the whole point of their having come here and adopted human form.
All right. Another important part of the content in book 4 was the list that is given in chapter 13. And my understanding of that list is it can be viewed as 16 benchmarks for what or for how an awakened species behaves. And, you know, and it does point out that in all of those 16, a definite ways to go before we awaken as a species. But could you expand on that list and what we should think about it?
Well, there are 16 differences between highly evolved beings and humans who are living in an unawakened state. I don't have the list in front of me, and I don't have it memorized. Mm-hmm. But I do remember one or two of the items from that list. And by the way, the list is available online. People can I published it. You know, I don't have to go out and buy the book to get the list, because I found the list to be important enough to just put it online, free for the access for anybody who wants it. But I'll give you the address in a minute. But the two that I think struck me, number one, highly evolved beings tell the truth all the time. I mean, really, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help them God. They would never speak anything that was even vaguely not totally and absolutely true. Number two, they understand that they are, in fact, one with everyone and everything, that there's no separation. There are differences, but not divisions. And those are two different things, of course. Even as my fingers are different from each other, but not divided from each other. So, excuse me. So differences do not produce divisions. So they understand those two things, and they act in ways that demonstrate their understanding of those two things. And the other 16, maybe you have the list in front of you. If you want to read one or two that intrigue you, feel free to do so.
Yes, the list is really fascinating. It points out our deficiencies and where we have opportunities to
grow.
To change, to grow, yes. But number three.
Well, for instance, I'll give you one that I remember now. Highly evolved beings mean what they say, and they say what they mean. And those of us who are still awakening often do not do that. We don't mean what we say in every single instance sometimes. And we don't always say what we mean. So, but you can trust a highly evolved being to mean exactly what she says and to say exactly what he means.
Yep. it does kind of point out that when we talk about this process of awakening, perhaps it's more, it's certainly more than just awakening to the concept of oneness. It's awakening to the reality and the experience and the knowing of oneness. And in the example you were just talking about, I'm wondering about that, because that implies becoming aware of the reality of how we're acting and the reality of what works and doesn't work much more than we currently do.
Awareness is the challenge of our time. There's no question about it.
Right.
How smart do you have to be to know that two world leaders who shall go nameless, I'm not going to name anybody, just two world leaders would get on the internet and get in front of microphones and cameras and start bantering back and forth about who is the silliest one, who is the craziest one, and who has the bigger missiles, and who's right and who's wrong. To see world leaders, I mean, heads of government, bickering back and forth and name-calling back and forth like 9-year-old children, and to see that kind of behavior from world leaders, and to not recognize, that is to recognize, that is to know again, to not know again, wait a minute, this isn't a way to behave, much less is it a way to exemplify what leadership is about. My heavens, what is going on here? When did we get to a place where leadership was name-calling and bullying? Oh, my goodness.
I agree completely. I want to read two more of that list of 16 and hear you talk about these. An awakened species does not embrace a principle in its civilization that correlates with the concept that humans refer to as insufficiency. Please talk about that.
We don't have sufficient time.
Okay. <All
right>. I couldn't resist. No. we live in a world where we think there's not enough. There's not enough time. There's not enough money. There's not enough love. There's not enough sex. There's not enough power. There's not enough food. There's not enough shelter. Everything is in scarcity. And the idea of scarcity has done more damage to the human race than any other single notion, with the possible exception of the notion that we are separate from each other. Mm-hmm. So however, we have all had whatever we have needed, or we wouldn't be here. I was attending a class about 25 or 30 years ago. I remember this vividly. And the teacher was a woman named Terry Cole Whitaker. And she said to me, she didn't say to me, she said to the group, there were about 1,500 of us in the audience. And she stood in front of that audience and she said, none of you have ever really needed anything in terms of your survival. Maybe there are things you've wanted or desired or wished you had more of, but none of you have ever been let down by life to the point where you couldn't move on and you couldn't go on. And the proof of it is that you're sitting right here in the chair. Mm-hmm. Notice that you're right here. So God invited me to tell everyone in the sound of my voice right now, notice that there's enough. Enough to satisfy our greed? Perhaps not. But enough for us to move forward with our lives in the way that would allow us to complete the agenda of the soul? Yes, there is. Unless we do not have enough strength and enough courage to call out those who would take that opportunity from us and actually kill us in the process. So what we are invited to embrace is the notion of sufficiency for all. And if we embraced economic, social, and political and spiritual principles that would allow us to demonstrate sufficiency and to actually create sufficiency for everybody on the planet, you know, I want to share something with the audience here, my friend.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether your audience is aware that 653 children die on this planet of starvation every week. I meant every hour.
Wow.
I said every hour. 653 children die of starvation on a planet which imagines itself to contain entities that are evolved, that we are a civilized civilization. I didn't make that number up. Google it and just check the number out. How many children die every hour of starvation? Hopefully the number has not gone up since the last time I checked. Now we have to ask ourselves, how is it possible for a species that imagines itself to be at least minimally evolved to allow such a travesty to occur? What is it we don't understand here, the understanding of which would change everything? And who is going to be the leader who will show us that? Oh, and by the way, leaders don't say, follow me. Leaders say, I'll go first.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and I recognize that statistic from the, I think it was in the Essential Path. Let me read the last, actually it's the last benchmark in the list. An awakened species has harnessed the power of metaphysics. Humans in an unawakened state often largely ignore it. Please add to that.
Yes, well, this statement speaks for itself. We are ignoring the power of metaphysics, which is to say the power of our thought and the power of who we are and the impact that we in fact can make on the world. Not that we're here to make that impact on the world, but the impact we can make on our own lives to drive forward the evolutionary process of our individuated soul. So we don't use the, you know, listen, when I was about, 18 or 20, I read a book, which at that time was an old book. Now it's an ancient book. It was written by a man named Norman Vincent Peale, Reverend Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, if you please, a Christian minister. And he wrote a book called The Power of Positive Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I read that book when I was about 19 years old, and I went, oh, wow, wow. And this wasn't, you know, a new age metaphysical guy. He was a Christian pastor of the Marble Cathedral, I think, in New York City. But he wrote that amazing book, which sold millions of copies and changed the lives of people everywhere. The Power of Positive Thinking. Many books have been written on that subject, of course. He wasn't the first one, nor was he the last one to speak on that topic. So we have been told over and over again by those who have gotten in touch with that power that we are not even beginning to use the power of metaphysics in our lives to the extent that most of us could do so. Guided visualization, imagery, positive thinking, confirmations, what I call, you know, confirmations, people call it affirmations, a rose by any other name is still a rose, but we get to use the power that God has given us to produce outcomes in our physical reality. And that power is very real. Don't think that it's not. So people, I remember Jim Carrey, the wonderful comedic actor,
right?
When he first started, the story is now well known because he's told it so often. When he first got into acting, he wrote a check for himself. He just wrote a check to Jim Carrey for $1 million. And he put it in his wallet and he said, you know, to make it real. And of course, these days he's paid many, many multiple millions of dollars to do a single role in a single movie. I hope he can get his life together because he's kind of had some challenges in the past several years grappling with his own incredible success. But there's no question that positive thinking and the power of metaphysics is being underutilized by the people on this planet. myself included. So it takes discipline, and it takes awareness. One simple example, whenever I have a negative thought about anything, I try very hard to get it out of my mind. You know, even if it's true, by the way, even if it's a true negative thought, looks like it's going to rain. Well, it might in fact look like it's going to rain. But if I don't choose for it to rain, if I'm not praying for rain, for my crops to be saved, if rain is not my desired outcome right now, I can just get that idea out of my mind and to change my thought about it. And so I don't look upon the future right now with the virus outbreak, with the financial challenges and the financial collapse of the world, with the racial injustice that we're seeing, this triple whammy that's being visited upon the human race. I see these as very serious, delicate, challenging obstacles, but not irresolvable, nor will they create a circumstance that we cannot survive and overcome. I see it as just the opposite, an opportunity for us to announce and declare, to express and fulfill, to become and to experience who we really are.
The question is
whether we're going to be that. The question is whether we are going to step into the beingness of that. Here's Bill again. Bill said it perfectly. To be or not to be. That is the question.
Right.
Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to rise up against a sea of troubles and by opposing to end them.
All right. So I'd like to just close. We're running out of time here, but just say a few final words on the message of the essential path, which is what you're talking about. How do we move forward?
By embracing and accepting that there is only one of us, that we are all one, by dropping any idea of separation. And how I functionalize that in my individual life is by putting into practice to the degree that I can, and I'm only a human being, I'm not walking on water over here, but trying to do to the degree that I can what I was invited to do by God when I asked God in the very first conversation with God book. I said to her, you know, what is it? What is it? I mean, what does it take to make life work? Can you just give it to me in one sentence or two? I don't need to read, you know, 65 books. Just give it to me straight. God said, Neil, it's really very simple. The problem is you think your life is about you. And your life has nothing to do with you. Your life is about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. And when you understand that, you will have unlocked the key that can produce the outcomes for which you have yearned and stressed and strained through all the years of your life. And it's turned out to be true. It's just a different way of saying we are all one. And let your every thought, word, and deed be an expression of your awareness of that truth. Or to put it another way, do unto others. Now, by the way, this is the platinum rule. The golden rule is do unto others as you would have it done unto you. The platinum rule, platinum being more valuable than gold, the platinum rule is do unto others as they would have done to them.
Very good. Neil, thank you so much for being here today. I and I'm sure all of the audience appreciate it so much to hear guiding words from you that come from a much higher source. Very powerful. Thank you. And I hope you have a great life and a long one.
Thank you, Ray. It was very kind of you to have me on your program. I appreciate the opportunity to share the messages that I've received in the Conversations with God material.
Okay, so I am Raymond Posch with Be Empowered, Be Inspired. I am a spiritual life coach who helps people build their dreams so they can live the life they love. Check out my coaching programs and sign up for a free life vision webinar at liveyoursuccess.com. Have a great day and a great life.